You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, as we know, the big topic at the moment is the assassination attempt on former President Trump. It's what everyone's talking about. It's what we're talking about. So I'm very pleased to bring a New Zealand expert in to talk with us this morning. It's Dr. Ruben Steff. He's a senior lecturer at the University of Waikato. He's someone who's quite the expert within the areas of foreign policy, international relations, and security. So I think there's probably no one better within the New Zealand context to have a little bit of a chat to about this. So Ruben, or Dr. Steff, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Simon. Good morning. Great to be here.
Hey, starting someone on the personal side, because I've been putting this to other guests and others on the show, is what was your reaction? How did you first find out about what occurred on Sunday, New Zealand time?
Sure, just chucked on the Guardian website, like everyone else, saw the stunning images of Trump, fist in the air, blood across his mouth. And the first thing I thought was, oh, this guy's dead. Like, he's been shot so many times, the blood's actually coming out of his mouth like a horrible action movie or what have you. Of course, it turned out it was an attempted assassination. But I would say shock, but in a way not surprise, just given the level of the heightened rhetoric, the intensity, the energy, you might say, in American politics right now, that I think many of us thought it was only a matter of time. So someone took a crack at one of these guys, Trump, Biden, or before them, Obama, you know. But I and like some others, have been trying to figure out what this means for the presidential election. Because everyone jumps to conclusions, everyone wants to know what this means, and we simply don't know. So I'll have to caveat my comments with that. But, you know, this could very well bolster Trump's prospects. Why? Well, if we just look at the superficial level, he comes out of that attempt and his, you know, fist in the air, screaming, fight, 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 looking strong, courageous. I mean, to have the presence of mind and the political moxie in the moment to respond the way he did after the assassination attempt is impressive. Whatever you think of his politics, he looks confident and so on. Turning to Biden, I mean, he presents these days as looking pretty weak and confused. So it's at that very simple, superficial level, this looks good for Trump. But if you think about the voting constituents, what Trump needs is not his base. He's got his base. They're going to be more with him now than ever before. And you're looking at something like 33% of the US population. He also needs Republican moderates, many who have abandoned him in recent years. I suspect some will be coming back to him right now as we speak. I see Nikki Haley is going to speak at the Republican National Convention now. And for a while, she was part of the Republican wing that was a bit hesitant on Trump. But he can potentially leverage this, especially in the convention and his speech in a few days from now, if, as we're being led to believe, he comes out and pushes a unity message. You know, he does the kind of famous Trump pivot that everyone's been waiting for, where one day he comes out and he sort of says, well, yes, you know, I've been aggressive and assertive, but I've come to Jesus and I now want to unify the country. So I think if he does that, I mean, that could very well draw in a lot of moderates. But one other thing is that in 2016, one way he won that election and surprised everyone and shocked even the pollsters, or at least surprised them, was he got a lot of low propensity voters and a lot of voters who had never voted before in a US presidential election. And the polling was missing them because people don't take them seriously. But this could very well drive that. If you're kind of on the fence, you're someone who's not that engaged by US politics, perhaps this assassination attempt, the way he reacted, leads you to get off your bum come November and actually go out and vote at the polls. So that's the case for Trump. This actually will draw in people in the middle, draw in low propensity voters who otherwise just don't care and will sit at home. There's also the argument it could mean very little, that Trump is such a known quantity, and that actually one reason quite a few people don't vote for him, especially in the middle and the suburban housewife and so on, is because he is a vortex of chaos. And that they just want this gone. So even the assassination attempt is viewed by them as just another symptom of the Trump chaotic nature. And they it does not really change the polling. We'll only find that out in the days and weeks to come.
I suppose, too, there's a bit of an element. I wrote about this the other day, that, of course, the Democrats put in a further lens is Democratic voters are unlikely to switch But as you say, that low propensity voter, I noted, and it was only one interview, one person who, you know, was actually a friend of the man who died, said, you know, he's never voted before, not registered, but will in this case vote for Trump, if you will, out of respect for the volunteer firefighter husband and father who died. And I suspect too, for what my opinion's worth, that you've got, yeah, those two competing images that it's, I would use the word iconic now. I try not to use that word often, but the one of the Associated Press of Trump, as you say, fist in the air, the American flag behind him. You couldn't stage it versus Biden. And that's not trying to be partisan. It's exacerbated the imagery between the two of them. I mean, there's some talk that they will now leave Biden to be the candidate. This is a theory from some commentators, and your view would be welcome, that the talk of removing Biden will now stop, will decline, because there's a sense that Trump probably will win. His polls were relatively strong before the attempted assassination, probably stronger now, that a Gavin Newsom and others won't want to step into a losing race. Do you think there's any credence to that?
I mean, it's possible. And in that case, they just leave Biden to dry, hang him out to dry. He takes the bullet. They lose this election and they prepare for the next one. But, I mean, American politics is so high stakes. The individuals involved, Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, these are political creatures. I suspect they will think, whatever they think of the chances or odds, they will back themselves. I mean, politicians tend to be pretty optimistic because they've been quite successful in their lives and careers, I find, which is on one hand nice, but actually surprises some people. I think they will still go for it. But, of course, it still requires Biden to withdraw. I mean, they can, at the Democratic National Convention, turn against him and try and pull him out kicking and screaming. But what they don't want is a divided convention, right? Going into the election, a united party is going to be much stronger, especially just given the small margins upon which this election could turn. They've broken down the 2020 election, and Biden only won by a few tens of thousands of votes in a few key states. So I think if Kamala or Gavin Newsom want to go for it, what they will probably do is wait until about a week before the Democratic convention, which is about a month from now, and there will be an orchestrated official switch between Biden and them. But this narrative that they simply won't try because they think they cannot win, I don't believe that. I don't think that's how these people think. I think they want to win at all costs, most of them.
And I found through Greenwich, New Zealand politics, politicians, even if things are looking against them, if there's an opportunity to advance, particularly to leadership, politicians take it. It's sort of the old, you know, bird in the hand's worth two in the bush type dynamic. It's like, yep, might not be the opportune time, but there is an opportunity. Yeah. I mean,
it may never come again, Simon. Who knows? Yeah. 4 years from now. Yeah.
Exactly the point. So why so far is Biden able to hold on? And again, I'm not asking this from a partisan point of view, but you know, he's clearly struggling. The debate was really bad for him. Lots more commentary that mainstream media have turned on him, yet he can still hold on. Is it his legacy? Does he have massive donors? Why is he able to sustain the pressure to remove him?
Well, I mean, the polls have not decisively swung against him. He is losing the polls, but we haven't seen a collapse, some signal that would be like, oh my God, this man cannot win. We also are led to believe he has quite a small circle around him. And his family apparently are key advisors, including Hunter Biden, which is you know, a bit ironic. But so we're led to believe he believes he can win. That's what he said. He said the polling has not indicated to him that he is going to lose. And I think there's also a bit of game theory here, in the degree that, let's say you don't want him to win and you're in the Democratic Party. If you call for him to withdraw and he doesn't, you're potentially are going to be losing favor within the Democratic Party. Now, a number have done that, but it hasn't been a massive groundswell. It hasn't been a majority of Democrats all taking that position yet. So I think that's a fear. The kind of, we either all do it together, otherwise no one is willing to do it. And as you say, there are other considerations, the money, the funding, endorsements. I gather, though, some of that, some endorsements, some money has now been put on hold, essentially. So Nancy Pelosi has also been signaling kind of different directions. She's been saying, you know, we support Biden, but we're really waiting for him to make his decision whether he will run or not. Well, he's made his decision. So, but they're signaling Biden, like, hey, look, we don't necessarily want you here. We'd like you to make, we would want you to make the decision, please, for the rest of us, so we don't have to try and pull you down kicking and screaming. But there's a lot of inertia, I think, in the system and in the Democratic Party.
Which is just going to make the election fascinating. As you said earlier, there is so much riding on this. And look, for what my observations are, there are a few Democrats calling on him to go. But when you've only got 10, 15, that might, to a New Zealander, sound like a lot. But in terms of the wider Democratic Party, that's only quite a few, even when it's the likes of George Clooney or a couple of the senators. I mean, at the moment, we've got the Republican conference or convention on. Would you say unity is a really key factor for them? You mentioned Nikki Haley earlier. They got Ron DeSantis to speak and so forth. So do you think the Republicans have got that unity message loud and clear?
Yeah, and that's coming through in the reporting we're hearing from the first day of the convention that was yesterday, that there is the party is surprisingly unified. And only a few months ago they were not, because Nikki Haley was challenging Trump. And there was a belief that she had kind of a voting block. But again, the suburban housewife who maybe would vote for Nikki Haley, but not Trump. And with her out of the running, those voters might go to the Democrats or sit it out, or at least not go for Trump. With her at the convention, with Ron DeSantis there, it looks like you have a unified party. And the assassination is just, you know, galvanized that even more. So I think, to a lot of people's surprise, we are going to be looking at maybe the most unified Republican Party in some election cycles.
Which will make it formidable, which will be, again, challenging for the Democrats. I don't know about you, I would love to be within their caucuses, if that's the right term, to see all the machinations. But turning more to a foreign affairs lens, when we think of the assassination attempt on Trump, what, and it's an incredibly broad question, but what are the foreign affair implications of this? Is there an impact on New Zealand that you see, or a potential impact?
Sure, let's have a stab at the general question first. It's very hard to know, isn't it? Because I think we're all processing it. I mean, it's only in a couple of days, and we all want to quickly know what this means, this assassination attempt, and we're processing. What I would say, though, is that if you are a foreign leader, let's take Vladimir Putin or the Ukrainians, or turn to the Middle East, the war in Israel, Gaza, and so on. If you are the leaders of one of those countries or groups, and you read the assassination as support, as leading likely to a Trump victory, maybe that does change your actions going forward. Yeah. Maybe Russia decides, okay, well, look, Biden, we couldn't really deal with him. He was providing really robust support to Ukraine. But Trump, well, Trump does sometimes signal something different. He is sometimes a little bit more hesitant or skeptical of such robust aid to Ukraine. He says he can get a deal done on day one and all those very Trumpian things. He just anointed J.D. Vance as his VP pick, and J.D. Vance has been very skeptical of strong support for Ukraine. So maybe this gets Putin to think, well, I don't have to moderate this year. We can dig in and we can wait for Trump to come in. How, if Putin was thinking that Biden was likely to win, he might think, okay, We are going to face a continued robust NATO alliance and Ukraine and support for Ukraine. So we have to fight like hell, and there's going to be no compromise here. Maybe with Putin, Trump potentially coming in, he thinks something different. Israel is similar too. Bibi Netanyahu and Donald Trump had a very good relationship. Now, Trump has actually criticized Bibi a couple of times since the attacks against Israel late last year. But nonetheless, Trump says a lot of things. So maybe Bibi thinks, well, if Trump's going to get back in, actually, the very strong, robust support for Israel will be sustained. And of course, Biden has provided pretty strong support for Israel, but he's held up a few arms shipments and sometimes signaled a bit more hesitancy and outright criticism at time of Israel. So again, actors in the Middle East might change the calculations for the coming year. As it comes to New Zealand, oh, geez, Simon, it is just so hard to know. I mean, there is the doom and gloom view where if Trump gets in, who knows what he could do? Maybe he pulls out of AUKUS. Maybe he retreats American military power from parts of the region and so on, the broader Indo-Pacific region and so on. I'd be quite skeptical of that. I mean, it's been more NATO where we've seen Trump, you know, issue signals of some concern about the level of American support and strong concern about how little he has believed NATO states have been doing to help really defend the alliance and therefore defend themselves. But for the Indo-Pacific, I mean, I gather he has spoken actually pretty fondly about AUKUS. J.D. Vance very recently said he supported AUKUS. So I don't know if Trump's approach to our broader region would be much different than his approach was when he was in power or when the Biden, you know, the current Biden administration was in. And of course, to Trump, he was the one in 2017 that declared China was a revisionist actor and a strategic competitor and challenge. So for him, China is the major concern. The trade war, of course, comes in from 2017. So I don't know why Trump would be any softer on China than he was when he was in power or that Biden has been. For us down here, again, we could be accused of free riding, okay, and not paying our way. And that is, I think, a fair accusation. I think many commentators in New Zealand, even those on the political left, would agree that our military is in a state of disrepair and eventually will need to be rejuvenated. But the Americans, you know, looking at us, if they see our security commitment as showing our commitment to what we might call the broader Western alliance and to America's strategic interest, and Australia, by the way, our only ally, it's possible that they could be quite concerned that there could be some damage to the New Zealand-United States relationship. I would just say, though, that if I look at what Judith Collins, Winston Peters, and Christopher Luxon have all been saying in recent months, it looks like they're aware that we haven't been carrying our weight. And they have been signaling that they want to remain, if not increase our alignment alongside the Australians and Americans and so on, potentially consider joining AUKUS Pillar 2, the technology sharing arrangement. So Trump, I mean, you know, we know he doesn't like to read much, or so we're told. Perhaps he gets a briefing in November or December about New Zealand. There's a few bullet points, and some of those bullet points might say New Zealand has signaled very strong support for US security interests, Western security interests. New Zealand has issued stronger condemnation of China in recent years than previously. And he simply goes, well, the Kiwis are headed in the right direction. We don't like the fact that they're kind of not spending enough on their military, but they're saying the right things, they're acting the right way. So I'll give the little Kiwi a pat on the head. But I also won't be surprised, Simon, if we do, before he gets to power, if he comes to power in November, see New Zealand announce that there will be an increase in military spending. Because we may feel the need to be sending those signals to the Americans before Trump comes in, if we anticipate he will.
Yeah, it's my suspicion or speculation is that since the assassination, we still have to look at the poll changes and so forth, that actually the calculations within MFAT here in New Zealand, within the Prime Minister's office and other ministerial posts will be, okay, it's more likely now that we could have a Trump presidency. What does that look like? And you touched on defence. I think this current government is making, despite my previous career and biases, I think they are making the right statements. The problem is they haven't yet put the money there. You know, the defence budget's gone backwards in the recent budget. And the Americans, well, I know through my own sources, have noted that. So it could be interesting, as you say, to see if there's a preemptive, I was going to say a preemptive strike, that's the wrong way to phrase it, but there's some preemptive actions in that regard. I mean, you touched on the likes of Russia and China. I mean, do other authoritarian or at least non-democratic countries look at what happened around the assassination and go, look, this is why democracy doesn't work? In other words, is there an opportunity here that these guys, these authoritarian regimes are going to try and exploit, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the propaganda in recent years has been about trying to attack and undermine democratic norms, our commitment to transparency, the rule of law. We know this through recent reporting. Anne Applebaum in The Atlantic had a really great article recently called The Propaganda War, where she talks about Iran, Russia, and China all using really intense propaganda now around the world to try and undermine our system and undermine the view of our system in the eyes of countries in the global south, who maybe are looking at China's autocratic system, looking at the Western democratic system, and they're considering, well, what system do we want? Which is functional? Which brings sustainable economic growth? And this assassination could very well be viewed as a sign of a dysfunctional democracy, and the democracy is inherently unstable. So, yes, I think this will assist their case in making that, and they will be trying to make that as we speak, I'm sure, through social media and other propaganda vectors.
You mentioned Iran, and as we're actually sitting down, I think it's CNN is breaking the news that there's Iran was looking to sponsor, I'm not sure the right terms, but was looking to sponsor or be involved with an assassination attempt on Donald Trump, and that actually security had supposedly been increased around them. Is this something you've begun following or aware of?
I have not. I mean, there's so much to follow at the moment, Simon. It's pretty easy to miss things here or there. So, no, I haven't. But we'll be hearing about those stories to come, I think. It's also, Simon, that this assassination, I mean, we're looking at it as an infliction moment or event. This could be the first of a number of events in the months to come where I don't know if that attempt will be overshadowed, but, you know, violence can beget violence. And who knows what other individuals, groups, parties, or countries might have up their sleeve to try and influence this election in the next few months.
Yeah, well, as you're pointing out, there's still a lot of water to go under the bridge. You know, even just on the political realm, we've got the Republicans and their convention, the Democrats still have to have theirs. Yeah, there could be much, much change. I mean, do you feel, and probably final question, and it's looking into a crystal ball, but do you think the Americans can pull themselves back from this hyper-partisan, high-level rhetoric back to a more civil discourse, or are we on an inevitable trajectory here?
To be determined. I think Trump's speech this week is an opportunity, potentially, for us to start walking back from the direction America has been headed on. If he goes in the other direction and he says in the speech, look, we know that the media are trying to get me. We know the courts are trying to get me. We know the liberals are trying to get me. And now we know they're even trying to kill me. Then all bets are off. But from what we hear, he is going to go for a unity message. We are hearing reports that actually he's been in a sort of reflective mood since the assassination. He's gone through maybe a bit of a spiritual shift. I think we should remain skeptical until we see some real signs of that and whether it sticks beyond a few days or not. But I think his speech this coming, I think it'll be Friday our time, will tell us if this moment is something that can hopefully be viewed in retrospect as shifting the tone back away from polarization and antagonism and so on in the US polity.
Well, if you're agreeable, we'll have to bring you back on after this week's show, after he's given his speech. Because as you say, I saw footage of him coming into the Republican convention and he looked a slightly different Trump. But as you say, let's see how long it lasts or not. But would love to get your impressions. Dr. Steph Rubin, thank you so much for your time and insights and also the important work I know that you lead through your academic and research side. So thanks for being part of the show.
Thanks, Simon. Great to be here.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.